National Gallery Podcast.
This is the National Gallery Podcast, and I'm Miranda Hinckley. This month, there's a lot going on behind the scenes in preparation for our highly anticipated autumn exhibition, Rembrandt, The Late Works. There are still a couple of weeks to go before the exhibition opens on the 15th of October, but we have a sneak preview. As institutions across the world loan paintings, prints and drawings to the gallery, we sent Leah Caribbean to look at a few before they make the journey to Trafalgar Square. First, a visit to Kenwood House, a former stately home on the edge of London's Hampstead Heath, with National Gallery curator Betsy Wiesman. It's home to a work that's a favourite of Betsy's and sure to be a highlight of the show, Self-Portrait with Two Circles.
One of the reasons why I think it's such a brilliant painting is because it seems to bring together so many aspects of Rembrandt, both as a person and what he was trying to achieve as an artist. So it combines a likeness of himself, but also, I think, a statement about his artistic ambitions, and comes together in a beautiful example of his craftsmanship and his skill in just putting paint on canvas.
It's the most extraordinary picture in terms of when you get close, it seems to sort of crumble away into these very bold brushstrokes, but when you step back a little bit, it all just melds together. And you get this sense of a living, breathing person standing in the cool light of their studio. It's extraordinary.
It is, and I think what it's difficult to appreciate in a reproduction or until you're standing in front of the painting is just how abstract parts of it are. It really is an impressionist painting. For example, if you look at the detail of his hand holding the palette and the brushes and the mahlstick, it's really just a scribble of brush strokes in varying shades of brown. And it's not until you step away and you see it in the context of the entire image that you really understand just what he was doing. And I think it's remarkable how Rembrandt was able to do that and how he was able to limit himself from adding any details that were extraneous.
Now, we're here in the very palatial surroundings of Kenwood House, and this picture is just about to be packed up and taken to the gallery for the opening of the show. But it's not just British collections that you're drawing from for this exhibition, is it?
No, it's not. We'll be having paintings, drawings and prints from literally around the globe, from public and private collections in the UK, Europe, the United States and even Australia. So it really is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
And Betsy, I know that you were toying at one point with calling this exhibition Rembrandt, His Finest Years. You really believe that, don't you?
I do. And of course, it's completely subjective because everybody's going to have their favorite work by Rembrandt from a particular period. But I think in these last years of Rembrandt's career, the last 15 years or so, you really see him as a mature artist thinking about what are the most important directions for himself as an artist. And he discards things that, you know, ideas or ways of painting or drawing that are artistic dead ends in a way that aren't as fruitful as other paths. And he takes those issues and concerns and modes of expression to their pinnacle, really, and finds a way of infusing his works with an emotional content that I think just clicks more in these final years than it does at any other moment in his career.
I simply can't wait to see them all. Thank you so much.
Betsy Wiesman, talking about Rembrandt's Self-Portrait with Two Circles. For her next preview, Leah went to the British Museum Prints and Drawings Department to see two separate versions, known as States, of one of the many astonishing Rembrandt prints coming to the exhibition. The work is Christ Presented to the People, in which Rembrandt makes powerful use of a technique called dry point. The dry point technique involves scratching a copper plate with a needle to form lines that retain a tiny curl of metal to either side. The ink that seeps into these curls is released during printing to give a rich, velvety blackness to the lines and shadows. Rembrandt's print shows the beaten and manacled figure of Christ standing on a platform before a lively crowd who were offered the choice of freeing either him or another prisoner called Barabbas. In the first state of the print, the crowd fills the foreground. But Rembrandt changed his mind, and in the later two versions, these figures are nowhere to be seen. Anne van Kamp, the British Museum's curator of Dutch and Flemish drawings, explained how Rembrandt made this dramatic change.
What Rembrandt did is he burnished the plate, so he polished the area where the original crowd was standing in front of the platform, and he just starts polishing it off so all the lines disappear again. And that is the scratchy effect that you get on the impression of the sixth state.
And it's extraordinary because it sort of changes the way that we approach looking at Christ. We become part of the crowd, don't we? We become those people who are saying, no, let's not bother saving him. Let's save Barabbas instead.
The changes that Rembrandt made are clearly meant to bring the audience closer to Christ and to that scene of judgment. So there is no barrier anymore between the viewer and Christ and Pontius Pilate. Now the foreground is cleared and we can have a direct connection with it.
And you're with these prints a lot. Do you feel when you're going from one print to the next that you're close to Rembrandt somehow?
I think with prints you really get a very close feeling because the different states, the working process, the imperfections, the improvements, the tiny little tinkering, you really see the artist at work and you can almost get into his mind and see why he's making all these small adjustments. And Rembrandt is clearly a very passionate artist. He will not make pretty images just for pretty images. He depicts subjects because he really cares about them. And I think with the dry point, you can really convey that passion because he can press the needle in a bit harder. He can work a bit more softly. So you get all these different feelings and emotions that are translated. And it's really interesting to be able to witness that.
In terms of the history of printmaking, where do you feel he stands?
Rembrandt is really a pioneer in printmaking because he's one of the great painters who actually also turned his attention towards printmaking. And that's very important because in the past there was usually a division. Either you were a painter or you were a printmaker. And with Rembrandt we see it all combined, and that is just fantastic to find that in one person.
Thanks to Anne van Kamp. If you'd like to see the works we've been talking about in context with many other masterpieces from Rembrandt's final years, the exhibition opens on the 15th of October and will run through to the 18th of January 2015. Rembrandt The Late Works is sponsored by Shell, and you can buy tickets from the National Gallery or online without a booking fee at nationalgallery.org.uk. Next to 18th century France and the gallery's famous painting of Madame de Pompadour by François-Hubert Drouet. The work shows the one-time mistress of Louis XV in the early 1760s, sitting demurely at her tambour frame, sewing. But what really interests art historian Jackie Ansell is the exquisite dress she's wearing. Madame de Pompadour was such a leader of fashion in her time that dolls wearing her latest clothes were circulated to an eager audience of court ladies on both sides of the Channel. In Drouet's painting, she wears a beautiful flowered gown covered in ribbons and lace, and when Cathy Fitzgerald met up with Jackie, she began by asking if it's the most beautiful dress in the gallery.
I think it's probably one of the most sumptuous ones, certainly probably one of the most expensive ones, and possibly a real one, I think.
A real dress?
I think it's likely to be a real dress. It's always impossible to say, really, but it does have the air of something that could actually have been worn by this great leader of fashion.
And the lace is very beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, and that is actually my primary evidence, I suppose, for thinking this is a very, very expensive dress. Because if you look at the dress, it's absolutely smothered in lace. She's got lace forming a great big flounce at the bottom of the dress, and edging her elbows, she's got falls of lace. It looks like there's about 7 different falls of lace there. When you understand how much this lace costs, you realise that she really is showing off.
So how much would it have cost?
Well, we know quite a lot about her because of her inventory that was published after her death. And there were 14 whole other dresses that were valued the same as a suite of lace. And one of the reasons for it costing so much is that it's parchment lace, where you draw a design on parchment and then you literally embroider over that design. So you've got these individual stitches, and it would take one woman 15 years to make this much lace.
And what about the fabric? What does the fabric tell us?
The fabric at first sight looks like it might be one of these glazed cottons that are called chintz, but we think it's much more likely to be a painted silk, so a hand-painted Chinese silk.
And again, that would take a very, very long time, I'd imagine.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's got the luxury associated with the exoticism of having been brought from overseas, having been imported.
And Madame de Pompadour was a real style icon at this point, wasn't she? Not just in France, but also over in England.
There's a letter that describes a woman going to court in Britain who was waiting for her hair to be dressed once she'd received the fashion doll from Paris, dressed exactly like Madame de Pompadour. The sort of hairstyle she'd be going for would be the hairstyle that we see here almost, which is a hair that's cut very short, then it's curled over heated lead rollers, then it's got to be greased with animal fat and then powdered, and the whole effect makes a tête de mouton, a sheep's head hairstyle.
And is there a part of her outfit that you would wander away with if you could, for your own wardrobe?
Well, if I had teeny tiny feet, I might just covet the little slippers that she has just peeking out at the bottom of her dress. And this is a little detail that you might overlook. A tiny little foot on a footstool and another glinting little toe, just emphasising how dainty and delicate she is.
Jackie Ansell talking about Madame de Pompadour at her tambour frame on display in Rumi. That's it for this episode. If you're visiting, don't forget we're open 10 till 6 daily and till 9 on Fridays. Until next time, goodbye.